Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm still Brian Ricks.
I'm still Rui Maximo.
And we're going to move on to the next module. But prior to doing so, we want to address some questions that were in the forum. So we'll go through these. The first one was, would you like to advise at some point on the best Link 2013 option for setting up a remote office that only has an internet connection for Link, not a dedicated WAN pipe? How do you maintain a quality Link experience at an internet-only connected site, or can you? Okay, so keep in mind, Link is designed and specifically configured to work over the internet with high latency, with lost packets, with communications of that. So if you have a small office that does have an internet pipe, and you have the edge configured on your production, or wherever that corporate communication happens to be, that works just fine. Think of any home office user, that's exactly what they're doing. They just happen to be coming out. Now, if the communications from that internet link at that office are small or tiny, it's going to be a problem. You need to make sure you can accommodate the amount of communications and traffic and or potentially video, audio. If there isn't that level of bandwidth available, that's where we use policies to disable and pull things back. But there's absolutely no reason why an internet-connected site, as long as it's designed correctly on both sides, both on the egress side of being able to have enough bandwidth and on the incoming side that your edge servers are highly available, have the bandwidth and capabilities of getting inside, designed appropriately on a pool perspective, sure, that works just fine. That's not a problem from a remote office perspective.
Yeah, essentially, basically, is your remote site, since they only have an internet connection, they're essentially a remote user.
Exactly.
Right. So any issues that a remote user would have, they would experience the same issue.
And again, Link is designed to work in that. I mean, that's one of the key selling points, is that it all works over the internet. Remote access is fully functional. Everything's fully available. Like we saw in 336 when we were showing the comparison of internal users versus external users versus federated users. And remember, an external remote user had full fidelity, full functionality along the communications paths, just as if they were sitting in their office. And again, that is one of the features, functions of Link Server. So, okay, next question. Can you deliver a SIP trunk from an ITSP directly to a branch location which has an SBA or SBS in it? And if so, what are the requirements for that configuration? So, sure, the SBAs, the SBA specifically, can be configured with multiple configurations. Let's say four POTS lines, a T1 line, an E1 line with PRIs. It can be configured with transcoding available for a SIP trunking specifically. As long as you configure and purchase the device in that configuration, sure. Now remember, an SBS doesn't have any of that communications built into it. It's a server with an external gateway. So now it's up to your gateway being correctly provisioned and purchased to support SIP trunking, and some do, some don't. So making sure that you have the correct device and configuration, definitely not a problem with that configuration. And sure, why not? We can do an ITSP directly to a branch if that's what you want. No,
that sounds good.
Okay. And then our last question is, do you still have to separate out the mediation server role if the SIP trunk from the ITSP is delivered via an on-premise SBC? Okay, so remember, the mediation server and its co-location is dependent upon media bypass being in play for voice. So even if the SIP trunk from the ITSP is delivered to an SBC, that's still going to have to hit the mediation server as its next hop, and then from there be transcoded down to the clients. The clients aren't typically talking directly and allowing media bypass. Now, if they provide some sort of media gateway that you can communicate with directly from your client's level, sure, that's potentially possible. That's no different than you having your own SBC. As long as your clients can communicate directly to it and it supports media bypass and refer, everything's going to work just fine. If it doesn't, that means all the transcoding is happening on the back-to-back application on the mediation server. That's where the load comes into play, and that's where it's not supported to be co-located. Okay. So with that, let's go ahead and move into our next module. That's Rui's going to be presenting, and Rui, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Brian. It's about configuring basic enterprise voice functionality. So let's get right to it. So we're going to cover the introduction of Link Voice Routing, configuring enterprise voice, defining voice policies, assigning DID numbers, that's direct inward dialing numbers, and how to design a dial plan. All right, so let's start with voice routing and number normalization and what E164 is. So let's start with some diagrams to explain how voice routing works. So this diagram looks a little scary here, but let's walk through it. And this is basically how Link Server performs the routing of phone numbers.
Right, and it really is an important thing to understand because it's when does the number get caught by what, and if it's not, where does it go to next, right?
Exactly.
And it's exactly the diagram that we use in the master's course of this one. This is a nice diagram to understand.
It is. It's a nice one. And it's obviously has evolved, and as the product gets more complex, this has really gotten more complicated. So let's just start here at the top right, and you can see that the user initiates the call. So the first thing that happens there is that the user initiates a call. If it's a SIP URI, then the URI gets routed, the call gets immediately routed to inbound routing, which then performs the routing over to the end user, because it's routing based off of the SIP URI. So that's pretty simple and simple path there, you can see. If it's a phone number, then it invokes the normalization and reverse number lookup that will be described next. So then the next thing is it checks to see if the number qualifies as an emergency number. And if it does, then it looks at the location policy for the emergency numbers and it applies the appropriate routing for it. Next thing is if it does not qualify as an emergency number, then the process continues. So from here, if it's not an emergency number, then it'll go over to the global aspect. But if it is an emergency number, it'll go down to the location policy where you'll see the PSTN usages that will be applied. So let's go on and check to see what happens when the call is not an emergency number. So we check to see that the number is a global number. And what we mean by that is that it complies with RFC 3966, and the number starts with a plus sign. So but this does not mean that it's necessarily a E164 format. So a global number does not need to be further normalized because it is already in the format that that we want. And here the key point about E164 is that it is a global number. And so that means that it's fully qualified. You can route based off of that number. But if it isn't, then we need to do some normalization process to it. And so that's where the dial plans come into play here. So we apply the normalization rules of the different dial plans. And we see which one it matches. And then we normalize based off that. So a dial plan has a list of normalization rules, and normalization rules have a set of patterns. So each normalization rule has a pattern that it matches, and if the phone number matches that pattern, it'll translate the number to the E164 format for it. So, and the dial plans are associated to. My mouse is moving. Dial plans are associated with users or group of users. So that's where it comes into play there. And here we go. So the next thing is, if at least one normalization, so if there are no normalizations that match, then an error is sent back, so that we can't route that phone number. So there has to be at least one normalization rule that matches for it to continue the process of routing. Then we check to see if it's if the number is a call park orbit. So it may be something that a user is picking up the phone because the call was parked, and so they're checking to see if the routing process checks to see if it's a call park orbit number.
Right, and that's really an exception to your E164, since that's a number that's not going to be normalized. However, or it shouldn't be. In fact, you should never have your call park orbits normalized where things don't work right. But that's where we have the communications come in to. The dial plans, nothing matched, but it is an orbit. There we go. Things are going to hit that time. And that's where we'll get into the voice application. Some of that is picked up and seen there. So.
Yeah, I think you're getting that.
Yep.
Right? All right, so after the number is translated to a global unique format, and that's E164, a RNL, which stands for reverse number lookup, is performed. So we now look at the number, and we see if we can actually translate that number into a SIP URI, if that's possible. If there is a match and we can find that, for example, I'm actually calling Brian and we happen to be in the same organization, but instead of calling his SIP URI, I actually call his office number. So this is where it actually happens, where the number is translated over to a SIP URI, and the call is then routed directly through his SIP URI. So it's an internal number, even though it was a number used.
Right. And so the fear of if I dial someone's number, full 10-digit, 11-digit, internet, depending on whatever your number is, if that number is owned by Link, it will never leave Link. It's not going to come out and the PSTN and come right back in. It's impossible for it to get out if you've configured Link correctly.
Correct.
If you haven't configured Link correctly, anything can happen. But we're under the assumption that things are set up right. So.
Absolutely, yeah. So once the number is translated to a SIP URI, like Brian said, it gets routed internally through the Link server, and that's where the inbound routing occurs, and then the call is then forward over to the user's endpoints, the active endpoints. All right. So if the number is not an internal number and there is no match for reverse number lookup, then we check to see if the number is a vacant number range or a call park orbit range. So we check to see if that's the case. And if it is the case, then the routing then goes over to the announcement or call park service application for appropriate processing. All right, so trying to get my mouse here. Okay, great. So if it's neither one of those two, then the next thing we do is we apply the voice policies and check to see which PSTN usages are applicable. So every user is assigned a voice policy, and the voice policy defines the PSTN usages. It's basically the authorizations that the user has. And so check to see which features the user is allowed to have and whether they what the capabilities they're allowed to do. The next thing that happens is that if a route is selected, then the following happens. So based on the PSTN usage, there's a mapping between the voice policy and the routing, and that is done through the PSTN usage. And we'll cover that a little bit more later. There's a route that it gets selected. And then the route is based off of the matching of the criteria. So we talked about the number being translated into an E164 format. Then the next thing is we look at the PSTN usages for authorization. And then we check to see if the number matches any of the following routes. And if it matches the routes, then we know which PSTN usage to use for that. And then we can go from there and we can map the route to a gateway.
Right. So the overall arching concept is that we first we receive a number input, and we see, is that an actual number? Can we normalize it? Is it something that we can deal with? If it is, does the person that's dialing it, that's their policy, have the right to call that number? If they do, they have a route that's up that it can make it out? And even if all of that's true, and it is a valid number to the system, and outbound it goes, doesn't mean that the PSTN world is going to accept it. So again, half of it is making sure that the system can accept it, and then does the user have rights to make the call.
Right. And so once that's all done, then a gateway is selected through a mediation server, and then the call is going to be routed to that particular gateway. All right. And then finally, we reach the PSTN, because once the gateway is connected to the PSTN, and so the call egresses out of the system from there. So now we just covered voice routing, and so finally, we can look at number normalization in E164 formats. So E164 format is basically a number that starts with a plus sign, and then it includes a country code that you have. So it's between 1 to 3 digits. For example, the Netherlands is 31. For the U.S., it's just 1. And then it has national destination codes. This is kind of like the area codes that you have. So or country codes. So for Amsterdam, it's 20. And then for Washington State, it's 425. So these are just your national destination codes. I didn't mean to say country codes. I meant to say national codes. And then you have the subscriber number, and that's actually your phone number, your unique phone number that you have. So, for example, the number for Microsoft is 882-8080. Certainly try that and see how that what you get.
Make sure that works out for you.
Yeah, exactly. And so below here in this table, it gives you some examples of what that would look like. All right. So let's look at the next step here. So configuring enterprise voice. So we're going to talk about scoping configuration items and policies. We're going to look at dial plans, normalization, regular expressions, and then address book normalization. So these are all different concepts. And so in terms of policies, there is a hierarchy of policies. So the first policy that it's going to do is going to try to match the best policy it can have. And so it's always going to go for the most granular policy that it can get. So the policies work from global to site to pool and to user. So those are the four different policies that you can actually have. The global is going to be at the AD level. So if your enterprise is Contoso, then that's going to be your global policy. And there's always a default global policy when you install Link Enterprise Voice. Then you have your sites. So if you have different sites, so if Chicago is one of your headquarters, and then London is a satellite office, for example, then you could set up two different sites. And then for each one of those sites, you can specify your pools, and each pool can have its own policy. So you can see in Chicago, there are two pools, so Chicago 1 and Chicago 2, and each one of them can have its own policy. And then in London, there is a pool in Dublin, and so it can have its own policy as well. And of course, for each individual user, you could also specify. So if you have special groups of users and you need to specify a policy for a particular user because of their circumstances, certainly you can do that, and that can be applied. So when matching policies to the users, it actually happens in the reverse order. So we look to see if there is any user-specific policies that it matches. And if it doesn't, then it looks at the pool level. And if there isn't any, then it looks at the site. And after that, it looks at the global level. Okay. All right, a dial plan. So what is a dial plan? I did mention that a dial plan is a name set of normalization rules that translates phone numbers for a name location, an individual, or a contact object into a standard E164 format for the purpose of phone authorization and call routing.
Yeah, and they used to be called location profiles. And it's funny because the various people within the product team have said that I'm not sure why it's now a dial plan. Dial plan's misleading, but a dial plan is a location profile, so it's how you normalize in relation to a person and where they're at.
Right? Yeah, actually, you bring up a point. So I was part of the initial team that actually designed Enterprise Voice, and we actually called location profile. And we had a heated debate about it because it wasn't exactly a dial plan. And so we didn't want to mislead users by saying it was a dial plan, so we went with location profile. But that kind of, I guess, maybe backfired in the sense that people didn't understand what a location profile meant. And so I guess they reverted back and say, hey, it looks like a dial plan, smells like a dial plan, it works like a dial plan, so let's call it a dial plan. So that's why it went like that. But yeah, initially, like you said, it was initially called location profile.
Yep.
So, and I offer here a link here for more information for where you can read more about that. So normalization rules. So we talked about dial plans, and a dial plan is basically a bag of normalization rules. So it contains a set of normalization rules. And those normalization rules have regular expressions. So dial plans perform normalization rules through regular expression, and that's just using your standard normalization rules that you have. So if you're not familiar with normalization rules, you can certainly brush up on that on the web. There's a lot of information. But also, you can use the control panel, the link control panel, to help you with it. And you can see here on the right-hand side, this screenshot, that'll help you build a normalization rule. So it's actually pretty nice. You have, you know, you can specify the starting numbers. You can specify the length. So if it has to match a specific length, so here in this case, we're matching a linked, we're looking for a phone number that starts with 4 digits. So it looks like it's an extension, a 4-digit extension. And then it looks to see, well, do you want to remove any numbers? And it says there's no numbers to remove. And it looks to see which digits to add. So it's going to prepend +3120500 to the number. So the way it looks like, and here you can see the pattern to match, and that's a regular expression, is the caret means the beginning of the string. So it's looking for a 4. And it's going to look for one digit. And if I can read this carefully, it's going to look for 3.
Followed by 3 digits, yeah.
Followed by 3 digits. And then whatever is left over there, that's what the dollar sign means.
Right.
And then it's going to translate that by prepending +3120500. And then what matched the dollar sign.
Right.
So dollar sign 1 is going to match the first instance.
You know, regex is a language in and of itself. There are exam questions, just as an FYI, on 337 with regex expressions on which one matches and which one works, which one doesn't work. It behooves you to learn at least the basics of regex, the concept that a $1 or variable 1 is everything in the first parentheses, and variable 2 is everything in the second set of parentheses, things of that nature, not only from the exam perspective, but I think the control panel is great for building basic stuff, but once you want to do some real fancy lookups, ifs, ands, ors, things of that nature, then you're going to have to manually write that regex itself, which it supports. It's just not going to be able to show it visually as a building block within that control panel. So.
Yeah, exactly. And that was actually one of the debates we had. One of the members of our team when we designed this in 2006 said, well, why don't we just build our own language, something that's simple? And we went back and forth like, well, there is already a language, and that's regular expression for doing all this translation. And it's very rich. So we opted to go with something that is industry known and that is powerful enough that, you know, we're not going to be able to think of all the different possibilities that, you know, people can use for, you know, translating phone numbers. So we figured, let's give them the full power, and then you guys can figure out what you need to do with that. And so that's why, even though, you know, you'd want to learn regular expression for link, it applies for anything else as well, everywhere else. For example, even your own editor, you could use regular expressions and other applications that you may need, even in PowerShell, for example. So it's a powerful concept to learn, definitely worth it.
Yeah, and on the exam.
And on the exam. You're giving it out.
That's the point. That's the point of the studying, right? We're telling you what to get ready for, so just not telling you what the question is, but learn regex in order to make things work in order. If you want to pass the exam, help yourself.
Absolutely. Totally agree. All right, so let's talk about address book normalization. So what that does is it converts phone numbers from your external address book into E164 format.
Wait, there's another normalization happening, not just dial plans?
That's right, there is another normalization rule. And so the reason for the address book is to normalize the phone numbers in your Active Directory. So every user has a field. If you look in Active Directory, every user object or user account has several fields for user phone numbers. And what we've discovered is this is prior to link, that a lot of these numbers were not in any form that were normalized. So we debated back and forth saying, hey, do we want to go into Active Directory and modify those phone numbers so that they're all normalized? And we decided not to do that because we were afraid that if there were other applications that were using those phone numbers in that specific format, that we may be breaking that.
And that's not to say you can't. There are people that will go and put the E164 format in Active Directory, and if you do so, this whole address book normalization from AD is taken care of, not other stuff. Not only does this normalize your Active Directory phone numbers, but think about your Outlook contacts. If you've typed in a phone number, it doesn't have a plus, and it's merged it into the contact card, it can't if the number's not accurate and can't dial it. So.
Right, exactly. So like Brian said, if the numbers in your Active Directory are normalized, and I certainly recommend you doing that if you're starting from scratch, or if you don't have any phone numbers in there, definitely just start using the E164 format directly into Active Directory. That way you don't have to worry about, you know, having to do specifying address book normalization rules. That's one less headache to have to worry about. And so how do you customize the address book normalization rules? Well, you create or edit the file here called company underscore phone underscore number underscore normalization underscore rules. Mm-hmm. And you add your regular expressions to it. And then once you are done specifying your expressions, then you can run the ABS server exe with the dash test phone norm with whatever the file, and it will upload that.
All right. So if we run ABS server test phone norm, put in 1.425.555.1000, it's either going to tell us that there was a match in your address book normalization file and the line and which one it used, or I'll tell you that no such normalization is going to happen. And really the key to this normalization here, it's not so much that link doesn't work if you don't do address book normalization. What it does mean, and what you'll notice is if you've added users in your environment, you're Enterprise Voice enabled, and you look at their contact card, their phone numbers don't exist when you look at the contact card. So their work number is blank, there's nothing there, homes maybe are blank, whatever the case may be, and that's because we haven't found a number that's normalized and able to show up in the contact card. As soon as this is in place and it runs through a cycle, or you force it through a cycle, the address book file will be built, And those rules push down. When you log into Link, that's what's coming down to you, to your computer, to deal with this. So
that's right. I was going to mention that. So we talked about the voice routing, and that's actually happening on the server side. With the address book normalization, that's actually happening on the client side.
That's right.
So the address book files get downloaded by the Link clients, and they'll perform the normalization locally. So there is two types of normalizations happening, one on the client side. And if it's not able to do it, then, of course, it'll just send a number as is to the server, which then will perform the normalization. But if it's able to do the normalization and offload some of that effort, then it'll do it and then send the E164 format of the number to the server. All right. So that covers normalization rules and the address book. So the next part is going to be defining voice policies. So now we talked about, you know, this is about routing and authorization. So we're going to look at the big picture. We're going to cover voice policies, the PSTN usages, call forwarding, simultaneous ringing, routes, trunk configuration, and then an example as well. So the next step here is routing and authorization. So this, just for some background, this was a big topic of debate when we were designing Enterprise Voice back in 2006, 2007. And so we wanted to give you the flexibility, but we knew that by providing the flexibility, it added more complexity. And that's kind of the price that you have to pay for it. So what we wanted to do is we could certainly have made a mapping between voice policies directly to routes, and that would have been simpler to understand, but that would have created some restrictions into the product that would not have maybe satisfied everybody's environment. So what we did is we added a layer of abstraction, and that's what the PSTN usages are for. And so by creating that level of abstraction, it does increase the level of complexity, but it does provide you a great deal of control and flexibility into what you're doing. So that's the reason why. So you see here voice policies. It defines your user authorizations, your class of service, your voice feature sets that you can have. And then on the other end, the routes, it defines the call number and the cost of the call. So it basically, it's what tells you which gateway to connect to when you have a number that matches
And the PSTN usage is the glue that ties those two together.
Exactly. So the PSTN usage ties the two together, and you can see that you can have a many-to-many mapping here, and that's basically the purpose. And the calling number, the calling location, and the priority on it.
Right. So you could have an emergency PSTN usage that has multiple routes of in priority of where they could go, multiple PSTN usage emergencies, emergency one, emergency two, that then are tied to multiple voice policies.
Yeah.
And on. So it can get fairly complex in a complex environment.
So. Exactly. So like for example, let's just briefly look here. So you can have one voice policy mapped to a single PSTN usage, that then maps to two voice routes. You can also have multiple policies that map to the same PSTN usage that can map to the same two routes. So the value here is that the reason why we did that is if you made a change to a route or you made a change to a policy, you didn't have to like change everything else. So if you made a change to the policy, you didn't have to correspondingly modify the route. You just had to modify the PSTN usage and then reconnect the policies to the correct routes when you wanted to.
That's right. Because remember, voice policies are your class of service. So it's what people can and can't do. What are they authorized to make calls on? What features and functionality are they authorized? So you could have this, let's say you're at a higher learning location and you have students and you have faculty. Students aren't going to be able to make the same calls and maybe not even have the same features as faculty, but they all use the same routes. It's just what's determined what they can and can't do. So can they do long distance? Can they do international? Can they do internal calls only? All of that is what's defined by your policies, your usages, and then your routes all tying it together.
And that's a good example that you bring up, Brian. So if you have faculty and students, but they're all going to go out through the same route, but you want to have two different classes of services, then you define two different policies. And you just map them to the same usage, which maps to the same route.
Right.
And so that's how you do it. All right, good. So voice policies. Voice policies can be assigned on a per-user basis, a site, or globally. It doesn't have to be assigned for all users. Also, it's useful for common area devices. So it can be users, or it can actually be devices themselves. So what we mean by that is endpoints. So common area phones can be those. And when we say users, I'm using that term loosely because it can be a user object in Active Directory or a contact object in Active Directory. So you can assign a voice policy to common area phones to prevent misuse or high cost. This provides the admin more flexibility to control user voice entitlements. And by entitlements, we mean whether the user is enabled for call forwarding, whether a delegation, whether they can do delegation, whether they can do call transfers, or whether they can do call park and simultaneous ringing of multiple phones. And there's more over here on the right-hand side. I'm not going to cover every single one of them, but you can look at them in the voice policy of your link server control panel. You can find that there. And that basically defines what services you can have. In terms of the PSTN usage, so this controls the dialing capabilities or class of service by assigning PSTN usages, like we talked about. So it's the glue between voice policies and routes, and the PSTN usage record specifies a class of calls. By themselves, PSTN usages, they do absolutely nothing. They are just they don't define a route, they don't define a policy. They're just there to work and to associate voice policies and routes. So that's what their main purpose is there for, as we talked about. In terms of call forwarding and simultaneous ringing, in Link Server 2010, an administrator can enable or disable call forwarding and simultaneous ringing through the user's voice policy. In 2013, it enables call controls to introduce a full, a flexible call authorization mechanism.
And that was huge for a lot of companies because while I want you to be able to forward your calls to somebody within the office, I don't want you forwarding your calls to your mom's house so that if somebody calls here, it goes over to somewhere outside the company, that's going to incur me a cost. Prior to 2013, we had no way to dictate where you could call forward or simultaneously ring. Now we can.
Right, exactly. I mean, there were some issues where there would be fraud, right? Right. Where, you know, employees would set up call forwarding and then somebody, they could call themselves and then the call could be forwarded to an international number, for example. And so that would incur costs for the company. And so to prevent that, there's more flexibility in terms of authorization of how you can specify call forwarding and simultaneous ringing at the administrative level.
And that doesn't preclude that you won't or will have fraud anymore. That just means that if you have fraud, it's because you allowed it to happen, whereas before you were kind of forced into it. I mean, we can't solve all world problems, but
we can solve some of them.
We can, but there's still user behavior they have to deal with. So.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so using this feature, a company can restrict calls forwarded by users or through simultaneous ringing. So we can specify whether it's local calls numbers, internal link users only, or any custom authorization rules. So if you have any more complex authorization rules, then you can specify it there. All right, so let's look at how it works. So in here, we're going to look at the call forwarding. So you can see that there is a voice policy called Redmon. And you can specify whether it's going to have a PSTN usage of local or international. You can specify the call forwarding, or you can specify the simultaneous ringing behavior. So for both call forwarding and simultaneous ringing, you can specify call PSTN usages. So you can let it use the default behavior as it was in Link 2010, which would apply the usage authorizations. Or you can specify whether it's only allowed to call internal link users.
And that one's pre-built, so we don't have to do anything for that. That's just an option.
It's just an option. It's one of those options.
Which is a nice, right? You can sim ring or call forward to anyone within the company. That's no cost, so why not?
Exactly. And then the third one is that you can specify custom PSTN usages so that you can have special authorizations just for call forwarding or simultaneous ringing.
Exactly. So then, and if you think of that use case there, maybe you have free unlimited local calling to your local area code, so let people simultaneously ring and call forward. Maybe you want them to be able to ring their mobile phones, so your area codes are within that mix. You just don't want long distance or international charges incurred. That's how we could limit that.
Exactly. Yep. All right, so routes. Let's cover routes. So voice route associates a destination phone number with one or more public switching telephone networks, the PSTN gateways. All right, so once you've gone through, you dial a number, it's gone through the routing process, which then normalizes the phone number, checks to see if it's an internal phone number. If it isn't, if it is, it just routes it directly. If it isn't, it looks to see whether it's an emergency number, whether it's a simultaneous ringing, if it looks for call parks. It looks for all of those aspects. And if it doesn't match any of those, it does go ahead, after it has normalized the phone number, it will go and check to see which voice route it matches. And so now what it does is it takes the normalized phone number and it checks to see which routes it matches. And so it looks for the phone number and of course, after it's done the PSTN usage, the call authorization, it checks to see which route it matches based on the phone number. So a route is selected based on the matching pattern, and the PSTN usage control is used if the user is checked to see if the user is allowed to use that route. And then if it is, then the route is associated with one or more trunks defined in the topology builder, and the call is then sent to that gateway.
Right. And again, it's just sent. Whether or not it completes or not, that's a whole different story, but yes.
Correct. There could be problems, of course, with the gateway, right? And so that's why you can have, and that's one of the new features there that's available in 2013 is the MN trunk routing gateway. So we'll cover that some more in a later session. Actually, it might be even this one. So trunk configuration. So trunk configuration is applied to trunks, and those are defined in Topology Builder. The trunk configuration settings define the configuration and capabilities between the mediation server and the PSTN gateway. It may be an IP PBX or an SBC at the service provider.
Right. The key there, the trunk configuration, the first line that they're defined in topo is there's no way to add a trunk within the control panel. You only can configure and maintain or manage a trunk within the control panel. So if it's not there already, you'll need to go to the topology, define the trunk, publish the topology, refresh the control panel or change locations, and then it'll be an option that's there.
It'll just be updated, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the settings you can apply are there is whether media bypass is enabled or not on the trunks, whether you're using the RTCP packets, the conditions on their RTCP packets that you can specify, and whether you're using secure encryption on those packets. So that's what's covered on those things. So here's an example. Allow for centrally managing number formatting prior to routing to the PBX or PSTN for both the calling number and the call number.
And that's new, because calling, we had some configuration in 2010, called the user, we had no control. And that was a big deal for some PBXs that were expecting the number that it was coming from to be a four-digit number or something of that nature.
That's right, yeah. So that required some changes that actually made the configuration more complex, right? Because that required then trying to get a gateway that could manipulate the call number.
Yeah, well,
in this case, now we can do everything right here from Link.
Right,
we can manipulate the calling and
almost
the caller.
A requirement to have a gateway at that point if that was the case, because somebody or your PBX had to accept numbers from different configurations. That was,
Exactly. So here, let's look at this example, the calling number translation. So we'll translate a number that's, so what it does is it replaces the plus with three digits, 011. And so what the pattern is going to look for is it's going to look for a number that starts with a star and then
plus.
I'm sorry, plus. Yeah, plus. It's hard to read from here. So it's going to look for a plus, two fours, so 44, and then a digit. And then another digit. I can't see that. It's a little small. Anyways, and then the rest of the number. And so what it's going to do is it's basically going to replace a plus 44 by 011.
Right. And that's not uncommon where when we are making calls to outbound to an international call from the United States, most carriers are expecting a 011. A lot of this goes away from a complexity perspective if you're working with an ITSP because they're accepting E164 formatted numbers, but most places do not. So again, don't forget, we're always taking your input, converting it to E164 to kind of flow around the system of Link, but then on the outbound, that's probably not what the outside party wants. May or may not be, but probably not. So we need to manage that.
Exactly. So everything inside Link is going to be controlled is going to be routed as an E164 formatted number. But when you get out of the Link system, then you need to be able to translate into whatever format that the PBX requires or the gateway requires. And so here's the ability for you to do that. So here you can also manipulate the call number translation. So what it's going to look for, it's going to look for a pattern of plus 4433445 and then a four-digit number after that. And that's basically going to be your E164 formatted number. And it's going to translate it back to just the four-digit number. So it's so this particular gateway or PBX is looking for an extension number.
All right, four digits.
Four digits. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so that covers it. So let's look at assigning DID numbers. DID are direct inward dialing numbers to users, and then specifying a line URI and for internal only users without DID.
And these are, if you think about DIDs, these are objects of any type of object within Link. So whether this be a response group, whether this be some application service that you have, users, mailboxes, if you're sending over to Exchange UM, they're either DIDs or they're a number that's recognized by Link, a plus something. Otherwise, we can't route.
Right. And DID is going to be an E164 formatted number. So that's what we're looking for. And that's why they're globally unique. They're globally unique and they're globally routable. So that keeps it really simple. Now, of course, we do support extension numbers to make it simple for users to dial just, you know, a four-digit extension or a three-digit extension. But every user would be assigned a globally unique phone number in E164 format. There's going to be a range of blocks that you'll have to acquire from your telecom provider. And those numbers will allow external users to connect to a Link user directly. So that's the purpose of doing that. Of course, if you're only doing dialing within your organization, you don't even need phone numbers. You could just dial directly through their SIP URI. Mm-hmm. And so all this is really not necessary. It is really there to connect with the outside world on the PSTN form. So assigned, so yeah, as I was saying, these numbers are assigned to users when they're enabled for enterprise voice. So the moment you enable a user for enterprise voice, you need to assign them one of these DID numbers within the range or block that that you've acquired from your telecom provider. So that's an important aspect there. All right, so specifying a line URI. So DID numbers can be defined in two formats. So one is basically it starts with the tag tel colon, and then the full 164 format. So in this case, this example starts with plus, and then you got the country code 1, and you have the area code 425, and then you have the subscriber number, which is 882-8080. And you notice here that there is a semicolon, and the tags that says ext equal 8080. And that what it's doing is defining the extension number that can be used to reach that same user without having to dial the full E164 number.
And as people can ask, well, if I set up a four-digit dialing within a normalization plan, that strips it down to 8080, and that turns it into the telephone number, the tel plus 1425, blah, blah, blah number, why do it? And really, that's the next section you see. It's the application is expecting it when you log into dialin.yourdomain.com. That's what tells us that it is, in fact, has an extension, and in theory, it's more, it's end-user friendly in that sense, because we get to see the number.
So we'll cover this in the next part. So you could specify it just as the E164 phone number, or you could specify with the extension. And the recommendation is specify the extension now, because that way, if you need to be able to use it, you have it already. Otherwise, if you only specified an Active Directory as just the phone number itself, without the extension, then you have to go back in and change it, and it's a bit of a pain. So make sure that the extension number that you pick, whether it's three digits, two digits, or four digits, is going to be unique inside your organization. So there is no overlaps of the extension. So there's no ambiguity in terms of doing it. The extension number is helpful as well for optimizing PIN authorization for devices and dialing conferences. So when you're dialing in from a SIP phone, you can use your PIN and the extension number to uniquely identify yourself to the device. So you may need to deal with the extension tag here in trunk normalization for cases of PSTN rerouting. So if you're rerouting, then you need to make sure that if your gateway doesn't support this extension, that you need to be able to strip it out. Mm-hmm. All right. So internal only, so users without DID. So that means that if the user doesn't have a direct inward dialing phone number, people can't call them from the outside. So they're just going to be able to be called, to be reached through internal users. So the full URI points to the switchboard or to an exchange auto attendant number. So what they'll have to do is an external user will have to call the company number and then specify the extension, and then they can be routed that way. So a user will only have a unique extension. And so these are some examples. You can still specify a full E164 number, but it's going to be the E164 phone number of your company company phone number.
Right.
And so, and then the extension is going to be unique at that point. So, so the base number is like I said, should be pointing to the exchange auto attendant number. In this case, 8828080. The extension will be 1.
Right. So that's key, that the extension equals something. It doesn't have to be 1, but it has to be something. Otherwise, there's no way for us to, 1, get the call when it comes inbound to link, so that a call bound for 8080 goes to 8080 extension, in this case 1, or 2, that you'll have every number will have multiple numbers, and nothing will make sense, and you'll actually get errors within link that say, what is it? It says something to the duplicate numbers, but that's not what it says. There's an actual error that comes up that says, sorry, we have, we don't know which person to talk to because all of these numbers are the same. So you can't have the front and the back without an extension. You can't have the auto attendant not have an extension in this work ever, because you're going to have duplicate numbers within the system. Again, everything has to be unique. So
yeah, everything has to be unique. So even the main number has to have an extension on there.
Yep.
All right, so let's design a dial plan, shall we? So let's look at the design approaches. We'll look at real-world scenarios and recommendations. And then we'll do a route planning. And then we'll look at some details and the number blocks that you'll have to reserve from your service provider. So the first thing you want to do when you design a dial plan, is to document all existing dialing habits that you have. So you probably have a system in place. If it's not already linked, then you want to document everything that you're doing so that you could hopefully replicate as much as possible of the same behavior. It is hard to retrain end users to dial differently. I mean, it's definitely possible to do it, but there's a cost associated to doing it. So if it makes sense to continue with the same dialing patterns, then go ahead and apply those to link. If it doesn't, because there's ambiguity that creates or just too much complexity, then of course it's up to you to decide whether you want to change it or not.
And most enterprise voice rollouts, we see this happens all the time, where the most common is we dial 9 to get an outside number. We no longer need that 9 to hit an outside number because we don't have to. Older PBXs had a requirement of doing so. Again, we don't. So we then set up rules that say if there's a 9 or not. If there's not a 9, great. If there is a 9, great. That allows you to have a catch-all. Because again, like Rui was saying, it's really hard. There's some people that have been doing it this way for X amount of years, and they're not changing their ways anytime soon, whether intentionally or just because of habit. So having the ability for us to catch within link and say, okay, if you dial it this way, it turns into this E164 number. If you dial it this way, it dials an E164. All of that's possible from the administration side, but that's where the planning comes in. What are you dialing? There's no point in adding a 9 if you don't dial a 9 to get out today to your dial plan.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It doesn't hurt, but what's the point?
That's a good point. I mean, if you are dialing a 9 because your PBX requires you to dial a 9 in order to get an outside number, Brian said, it's not necessary to do that. So, you know, consider also not just applying blindly all the same rules that you have for your PBX to link, because they're not necessary. So see where you can optimize things as well. And then you want to, after you consider your current dial plans, you want to understand your gateways and mediation server locations. That's going to be an important aspect so that you can optimize your routes. And then, of course, last but not least, is understanding your customer requirements. If there's any special requirements with any new system, you always want to see what new functionalities available and how you can leverage those to improve your business processes. So first thing is you're going to define a strategy. You want to keep the existing dial-ins, dial numbers or new numbers when migrating to users. You want to see if you want to do those. You can implement changes or copy the existing phone number numbering plan. Definitely recommend if you are dialing, you know, a 9 or a 5 or any kind of digit prior to calling outside, just removing that because it's no longer necessary. And then whether you're going to be having an environment where you're going to have link-only phones or you're going to have PBX phones or maybe a mix of both, that's also going to add complexity to your dialing, to your design. So start with defining the routes. You're going to start with those. Then you're going to define your user voice policies. That's your class of services. And incorporate the requirements for least cost routing in there and PSTN rerouting. If the WAN link goes down or your gateway goes down or your service provider goes down, then you want to have backups as well. And we'll talk more about voice resiliency in tomorrow. And then you want to specify your usages to associate the routes to your voice policies. So it's a non-trivial amount of effort to define all these things. And there are opportunities for you to test these out before you actually roll it out. So real-world scenarios and recommendations, you can copy existing dial plan habits, but those are not always the good idea for doing it. As we talked about, like for example, if you're dialing a 9, if you're having to dial a 9 right now, to dial outside. And then some are just there to accommodate PBX. So look to see what are best practices for your organization versus what were some constraints that you had to apply because of your PBX. Like the 9, dialing a 00 for international numbers, or prefixing an internal number with a PBX-specific trunk number. Those things don't need to necessarily be there because, again, if you're using a E164 phone number, all those different rules and quirkiness are no longer required. So route planning. So if you have multiple locations, for example, if you have a gateway in Europe, another one in Asia, and another one in the US, you'll want to specify routing plans for international calls, national premium, national, local, and internal. And those would be consistent across. And you want to be as consistent as possible across your gateways. That's going to be an important factor there. And then here's an example of routes for the gateway in Europe, where you can see that the internal number, there is the mapping of the internal number. So it's gonna basically look for a two-digit extension, and it's going to map it to the full 164 format. For local numbers, it's going to look for a four-digit extension. For Germany, two-digit extension. And then for Europe, it's going to look for the full number there in its full pattern. And then for international numbers, it's going to look for a plus sign. So that's the example. All right, so we're going to do some exercise here, but let's take a look at what these mean. So we'll do some regular expression testing. Yay! So this should help you also on the test. So let's look here at Redmond operator. So the Redmond operator has a match pattern of a 0. So the number has to start with a 0. That's what this means. So it's going to start with a 0.
And only 0. Right?
And only
because
0.
Because there's no slash Ds, there's no additional digits. So within the first prins, remember that's your $1. Well, first prins up to the dollar, that's your $1. So we have 0. And
right.
Just 0.
And the dollar sign means it's the end of the pattern.
Right.
So the caret means the beginning of the pattern, and the dollar sign means the end of the pattern. And it's looking for this specific digit. And actually, over here in these two columns, it does specify that you're looking for digit 0 and exactly of length 1. And so the normalization rule is going to map that 0 into the full number of plus 1, 425, 555, 0101. So that's the example there. So if you have also another pattern here, Redmond three-digit internal number, it's going to look for a number that starts with 1, and it's going to look for two digits.
Right. Now the key on this one, or the difference is, you'll notice the ones outside the prins. Because it's outside the prins means when it becomes $1, it's not included. In this particular example, could we have left it in? Sure, because we're just saying we only really care about the last two digits, but it has to start with a 1. That's where the uniqueness is. But we could have just put back the whole 1, 2, 3 kind of numbers. It's just we didn't. So,
in the previous example you're talking about?
No, in the current one, Redmond three-digit internal. So we're everything outside of the prins is lost. We dropped that off. So we have a slash D2, which means we only care about two digits. And so in this example, it looks like it's typed wrong. The normalization rule would be 1, 4, 2, 5, 5, 5, 0, 1, and then our two digits. Right.
Well,
it's typed out. The way that your slide shows, that print should be on the other side of the one. So it's starting with one and included in part of your variable. In this example, it's outside of your variable, and so we're actually dropping it. But typos.
Yeah, we're dropping the one. That's correct. Yeah. And everything inside the parentheses is what's going to match.
Right.
So here it's going to have it's going to look for a 3-digit extension, mm-hmm. and it's going to prepend. It's going to take those 3 digits. Or those two digits.
It should be only two.
2 digits, sorry.
And that's the problem.
So it's looking for 3 digits. Uh-huh. The one is included in those 3 digits, but it's only going to take the last 2 digits, and it's going to prepend it to this number here. And that's where you're going to have the E164 formatted number.
Yeah. What's the problem there is that normalization rule after the zero prior to the dollar one should have a one. Fortunately, there's a typo. But that's okay. That's what it is.
So oh, you're talking right here.
Yep. Okay. So in our final numbers, while it has to be 3 digits in length, we're only caring about the last 2 digits of the pattern, and so we're dropping the one off.
Correct.
And only appending, and let's say we dialed 1, 2, 3, only 2, 3 would be added. Well, we're missing a one now.
Right.
So in that normalization rule, we should be 1, 4, 2, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 0, 1.
And then a two-digit. And then a two-digit extension. Yep.
Typo.
Typo on there. It happens. It happens.
We could just have the paren over on the other side.
You could move the paren over to the one here.
And that would mean that everything within the parens is your $1. So whatever catches within that is what we're doing.
Right. And the pattern here is that whatever's inside the parentheses is what's going to be captured and then going to be applied mm-hmm. to the normalization rule. So the next one is going to be a 7-digit extension. And so here, everything is captured. So all 7 digits are going to be captured, and it can be any pattern of 7-digit numbers. And it's only going to be looking for 7 digits. And so what it's going to do is going to prepend plus 1, 4, 2, 5 to it. Mm-hmm. And then you got, so this the 7 digits is basically your subscriber number, the full subscriber number there. And that normalization rule is correct there. Mm-hmm. So the next one is going to be 10 digits. So here again, it's going to match all 10 digits. And it can be any number of digits, any digits, but it has to match exactly a length of 10 digits. And here, it's going to prepend plus 1. So that means that the national number could be, it doesn't have to be 425, it could be 206, it could be 360, for example, any state number. And then the next one is going to be a Redmond, and you know you can give whatever name to these normalization rules, but it's going to match 11 digits. So here it's going to look for a 10-digit number that starts with a 1.
Right.
And that one is within the parentheses.
So we keep it.
So we keep that.
Yep.
So it starts with a 1, and it looks exact, and it has exactly 11 digits. And what it does is it just takes the number as is,
and
it prepends the plus to it.
Right.
Looks like we had a gorilla walk into the air. Yeah. And so that's it. So last one.
Yeah, the last one actually shows the example of what we were talking about with the error on Redmond 3-digit internal is exactly what we're talking about. Outside of the parens is something we're going to drop. This one is normalized correctly.
Right. And this one basically just drops the 011.
And adds a plus, right?
And
because again,
plus,
in E164 format, 011 means nothing. To humans in North America, that means an international number. So that's what it's for.
Exactly. Good. And that's it for today, for right now.
Awesome.
So we're done.
So then we will plan on hopefully having a demo after this break. We'll have a short break. We'll be back, and then we'll be able to go into an Enterprise Voice demonstration. Thanks so much.
Thank you.